they won a brief pass. And I'm just looking at Mr. Herman, the deck career. Someone has gained a brief pass from the technical staff. So, and then all these other documents that people are putting either undercover, overcover, under tables or whatever, they can wait. Or they can be speak to Mr. Herman about books and etc. But what we're going to deal with now is 22-2. But I see that the Honourable Tieto is not here. She was at lunch, Mr. Khadebe. Yeah. She has to be here.
Some of them went much wider than what we asked for. It wasn't really people that we could just push aside and say, you know, you went broader than what we requested. First off, a technical panel at the end of a bill's process is not a normal step in the legislative process. It's not something that happens every time that a bill is done. The reason for a technical panel on this bill is because the bill is extremely technical. A small word that is incorrect can have an immense impact on the copyright field. So it was something that the committee felt is necessary, and also because of that possible impact of this bill, we really took the panel members' comments very seriously. In fact, we had to ask for extra time to consider them. One of the members provided us with a 121-page document. So it was really something like I say, is a bit out of the ordinary. But when we worked through these comments, those things that clearly were policy decisions that the committee has taken, we pushed to the side. But if something was discussed under the guise of policy, we still had to consider whether the criticism against the wording of the bill had a practical risk. So that is where we're coming from. And having gone through all of these proposals, next week we will present the full draft bill with all the comments and so on in. What we want to present here are those comments that came from this panel, where we felt this could enrich the bill, it could align the bill with the treaties, which is one of the concerns, I think, even that members raised, that, you know, it doesn't help that you take part of the treaty. If you don't take something of a treaty, it must be a conscious decision. No, we are not going to... I think there's one appendix, for instance, that the policy is not to accept because our exceptions are actually broader than the appendix. But otherwise, you need to make sure that everything from the treaties are there. So these are the things that we are proposing. The first one that we're proposing is that the definition of collecting society be amended. I will also to add, the ones that we present today, in other words, are the amendments that are new and would require the public's input. The other amendments were things that were technical in nature, moving words around so it reads better, things that have maybe already come up in public submissions. They don't need advertising. These, if the committee would like these amendments to be put in, will require advertising. So on the definition of collecting society, the main change from the IP Laws Amendment Act's definition is the addition of it be having to be a non-profit company as contemplated in the Companies Act. Now, the non-profit company is something that in practice is currently happening, but the concern that we raised and the committee members especially felt uncomfortable just leaving it out is what if someone who wants to make a profit then comes and applies for accreditation? Then you can't say no, you cannot be accredited. So what this now is making provision for is it must be a non-profit company, and we are specifically linking it to the Companies Act. By linking it to the Companies Act, it means that you have to be registered under that Act, and all the safeguards of that Act will apply. Even the offences clause will apply. So all of those measures that were made available in respect of companies, will that be applicable? And then we just made it very clear that it must be owned, because that is one of the things that we said. It must be something consisting of rights holders. It's a company that works for their members who are all rights holders. So we have identified owned by, only members must be holders of rights. And then the paragraph C there, it's kind of what the mandate would be. What would you expect the collecting society to do? And then we have added the primary purpose must be to execute these mandates of members. Remember we said that if someone comes as a profit company, they might say, okay, but you know, we are doing this and that and the following, we're selling books, we're selling music, and we thought as we are a seller, we could also collect. And this is what that is trying to avoid. So that is the first proposal. The next proposal, this is something that now comes in relation to the treaties. So in our bill, we make provision for communicating of works to the public through wire or wireless means. From WIPO, the comment came that, yes, you are providing communication via wire or wireless means, but you're not going as broad as the treaty actually provides for. There are rights of distribution and rights of authorizing rental in respect of certain works that you're not adding. Initially we felt, well, you know, we could accommodate this amongst other things, but if we are going to advertise collecting society, then this is something that the department somewhere in the future will have to add to the Act. So it is something that will become necessary. It's in fact necessary now, but if it is not, if the committee does not feel comfortable with incorporating this now, it will have to happen at some stage in the future. The next one is, members will remember that we had a very difficult...
Can I just get a quick clarification for all of us? Just the clause 4, section 6. What you're saying here is there is a treaty, but this is adding to that. This is an addition. Or could you just clarify that, please, Advocate?
Yes, thank you, Jean. What our bill is doing is... The treaty provides for communicating the work to the public through wire or wireless means, for distribution rights, for rental rights. That's the treaty. What our bill does is only providing for communicating the work to the public. Our bill does not include distribution rights or rental rights. So from WIPO, the commenting was, you are not explicitly providing for distribution or rental rights. If a person wants to distribute or rent, it must be implied. So it is better to stipulate, in respect of clause 4, literary and musical work, that you may distribute. In respect of artistic work, distribute. In respect of audiovisual work, distribute and authorizing commercial rental. And in respect of sound recordings, distribute and authorize commercial rental.
Chair, I just want some clarity around this. Advocate, you said we either can put it in now or we're going to eventually have to put it in. What would stop us putting it in now?
Thank you, Chief. The only thing is that it must be advertised. So because we are advertising collecting society, it makes sense to put it in now. So that is just... Yeah. So I need to apologize. From us looking at all the comments, we started by evaluating whether if something had to be advertised, we were very cautious in coming to propose it to the committee. If we, however, are going to advertise collecting society, then it now is an ideal time to also include this. Chair, on the next slide, slide 5. Members will recall that when we dealt with sound recordings, now that is clause 10 on section 9A, we had a whole process of how the person who wants to use the sound recording has to approach a person, enter into an agreement, etc., etc. And it was a very long, drawn-out process. And in the end, the committee agreed that we should rather have this process where you have to register all the acts in terms of section 9. You must report on those to the collecting society, and if you fail to do so, that would constitute an offence. Now, when we worked through the bill, it was pointed out to us that this should also be applicable to clause 8, which deals with audiovisual works. And in fact, some of the comments already were that you should be putting it under all the rights, not just sound recordings. So this is one area where we think the obligation should be, because audiovisual is also problematic in respect of reporting. So the wording there is exactly the wording of 9A, only in relation to, of course, audiovisual work. So the proposal is that we don't just do it in respect of sound recording, but also in respect of audiovisual works. The next slide, slide 6, deals with collecting societies. Now, the counter of this obligation to record and report, it was pointed out by Mr. Myberg that you don't have the counter empowering provision for a collecting society to request that information. So what we would propose here is that you then indicate that collecting societies may require any person who executes an act in terms of section 6, which deals with literary and musical works, 7, which deals with artistic works, 7B deals with resale royalties, 8 and 9, audiovisual and sound recordings, to supply those records. And then it was also pointed out to us, I think by Mr. Baloyi, that it is not just royalty rates that are being negotiated. It is also licensing fees and tariffs. So that is another proposal to ASI. ASI just makes the empowering provisions a bit stronger. The next slide, slide 7, we then also felt that if your obligation is an offence in clauses 8, for sections 8 and sections 9, or 8A and 9A, then it must also be an offence for someone who does not report on a literary work, a musical work, artistic work, so that if you fail to provide that information to the collecting society, that must be an offence. So this is where we then captured it, and we just copied the 8A and 9A offence, and we repeated it here. So that is the proposal there. The next proposal on slide 8 deals with an administrator. So when a collecting society is no longer being properly managed, the commission must then take over the administrative role. And initially, or currently the bill says that the commission may approach the tribunal to appoint a person to assist the commission. It was pointed out by Mr. Baloyi that this is not sufficient. You cannot leave it to the discretion of the commission to appoint a person. This is an obligation. There must be an approach to the tribunal, and you further need to set out what expertise this person must have so that there is a guidance. So what is being proposed is that this person must be skilled in collective management and general administration of the rights under this act, or someone who is skilled in business rescue, administration or liquidation, or other skills deemed appropriate by the commission and the tribunal. So in other words, depending on what went wrong in the collecting society, it could either be someone who will take over that administration of the collecting society for a time until it is sorted out and back on its feet, or someone who will look at business rescue or possible liquidation of the company. And then the other skills, we felt it should be something that is the other skill, because we are broad about that, that both the commission and the tribunal must agree that this would be an appropriate skill. Just so that there's no allegation cannot be made that the commission is biased against a certain collecting society. The next page on slide 9, okay, this one, if members can bear with me, I need to explain what is going on here, because we cracked our heads for quite a good time over this one. What the Act currently provides is that if a manufacturer of, or that's not the right word, a printer is printing copies of books in another country, then that printer would be allowed to import those copies into South Africa if that the printing action would comply with our Copyright Act. In other words, we kind of give our Copyright Act external application, but not really. It simply means that we don't want someone to import something into our country which would have constituted an infringement in our country. But now the concern that the bill addresses, this is what the Act says currently, the concern that the bill addresses is that some countries might have broader exceptions. So in other words, in that country it would be legal to print it. So why would we stop someone from importing that into South Africa? So that is what our bill allowed. So our bill made it a bit broader to say, look, as long as it is legal in that country, you can legally import. Now, Mr. Baloyi and I think Ms. Woods pointed out that we are now allowing a loophole. So, Mr. Baloyi actually gave the example of Eritrea, who is not a signatory to the treaties. So he says a person from South Africa can open up a printing company in Eritrea, take a book from that I wrote, go to Eritrea, print thousands of copies, because it will be legal there, and bring it into South Africa. That's what we allow. So what Mr. Baloyi, Ms. Woods suggested that we go back to the original wording of the Act. In other words, you can only import if it would have been legal in South Africa to print it. That's what Ms. Wood suggested. Mr. Baloy suggested that we do allow that kind of printing, but we say that there must be the permission of the copyright owner. So in other words, if a printer in another country takes one of the authors of that country's book and with the authorization of that author prints it, then even if it was illegal in our or an infringement in South Africa, we would allow that importation. But conversely, if that printer takes my book and prints it there, as long as I have provided permission for that printing to happen, it can be imported. So it is a bit of a here or there, but we thought if we are going to advertise, let us consider Mr. Baloy's proposal, see how the public would take that. If it is very negative, then we have to revert to the Act. Then we have to revert to say, you can only import if it would have been legal in South Africa. But
can you just advocate, Van der Merwe, this has got nothing to do with the royalty issue, if it has it. So you're talking purely on the printing of this. In other words, nobody would lose out because even if it was printed in an external country, they would still pay royalties. So one of the issues here is the issue then about localization. If we can print, we should print. What is the actual issue then? Because I'm getting royalties even if it's printed outside, you see. So I'm not as an author, I'm not losing out. But what about our policy on localization? So I just don't understand why this is a problem, you see.
Thank you, Jim. First off, I would only be receiving royalties if it was with my consent. So there is an opportunity for work to be printed outside of South Africa without my consent, but within that country's exceptions and limitations. And then I don't get royalties. So that was a concern with allowing the other country's law to determine whether it would be okay to import something. So what Mr. Baloy proposed was that you at least need to make it subject to the authorization of the copyright owner. So that was the proposal that he did. But I hear what you're saying about localization. I think I'm looking now down the desk here. I don't know if from DGI side they can maybe explain what the rationale was to allow this printing outside. It's more than just one. It is the manufacturing. So it would also be duplications, adaptations, etc. It's broader. It is all the words.
Isn't
this
William? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I have a little problem with this clause because, for instance, what could happen is who's going to ensure that permission has been given? And, for instance, if there's a book that, for instance, the children are now inherited the copyrights and the royalties, etc., etc., are they the ones that are going to have to give permission? So what could happen is we could print 1 million books in China, import them into Durban, and then what? Does Durban, when they're going through the, say, or do you have the permission of the... I find it very dubious. I think that this will be a huge loophole, and I don't think that we should even have this in the Act. We should refer, I mean, in the Bill. We should refer it back to what the Act says. Thank you.
As we get Van der Merwe, will you repeat what the Act actually says here?
Thank you, Jay. We're just getting the Act. My Act is unfortunately on the actual screen. So, Section 28. So, let me take the committee first through Section 28 quickly. It is about the provided for the restriction of importation of copies. So in other words, there's only certain instances where it is allowed, and then we say that, and in the instances that we give, it would say, this is where you cannot import copies from another country, and this is where subsection 2 then comes in. If the work in question was made outside the Republic, if that work, had it been made in the Republic, would be an infringing copy of the work. So you would be limited from bringing those copies in if the work in question made outside the Republic, if it had been made in the Republic, would be an infringing copy of the work. It doesn't read very nicely. So it says this section shall apply to any copy of the work in question made outside the Republic, which if it had been made in the Republic, would have been an infringing copy of the work. In other words, regardless of where it is, if you want to import it, you need to apply South African law. If it constitutes an infringement in terms of South African law, then you may not bring it in. It's as simple as that. So another example, a person makes a copy in the United States of America. Because of their fair use application, they have broader exceptions than most other countries, and it is fine in their country to make the copy. Now, as it is currently in South Africa, we have limited exceptions. We look at what they are saying, and we say, no. That, in our country, would have constituted an infringement. You cannot bring these copies in. You need to have authorization of the copyright owner, etc., etc. That is what our country would have required. So the concern was that should we limit the U.S., if it was legally made in the U.S., from then exporting those copies to our country. So that is what the clause in the bill tried to address. The problem is it opens it very wide. And if you have someone without scruples, it could then be abused. To take it to a country where there's no copyright protection at all, perhaps, make those copies and flood our market with it. So that was the concern raised.
Chairperson, I understand what the advocate is saying, but the issue here is that we are not yet taking a decision. But if in the future we have to reflect upon that, it should have been advertised because it's something new. So what I suggest here is that let it go as part of the package of the advertisement. And then when we come back here, it will depend whether on the balance.
Yes.
Remember that we spoke about the hybrid model, which we are going to refine, but it will depend on the balance. But so that we can avoid the re-advertisement in the future, let it go for advertisement, but that does not mean that we agree with it. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. The only thing I'm concerned about, this came from Honourable Pichania.
Chair, I'm a little bit confused. I mean, copyright exists, and there will always be rogue players across the world. There always have been, and there always will be. If we align our copyright law as best as possible in terms of universal international application, which we're trying to do in terms of fair play, whatever it's called, fair use and fair dealing, then that's the way to go, and that's as much as we can do. As I say, loopholes will exist. You can't cover every single loophole. Even countries who are signatories to these, like China, for example, flout it every day of the week. You have to police that, you have to enforce it, you have to live with it, you have to do whatever you do. But copyright should be enforceable in terms of the original declaration of copyright, and then that should be enforceable across various jurisdictions in terms of their jurisdiction and how it applies to the international application thereof. I don't know how that reverting to some narrow interpretation to say we will be an island and say this helps in any particular way. It just creates more loopholes. Thanks.
I wanted to check with DTI. It all comes from you. Crafted by DTI. Now, I understand that originally the Act says why, which we've just heard. What was the purpose of amending that clause? Why did one move in that direction?
Chair, maybe I'll start by saying that we, as a department, the issue of access to materials is very important, and I think we just wanted to ensure that the bill is covered in terms of issues of legalities. But more than that, I think I will also request Ms. Badayachi to come in, but I think here the issue is about international. We are part of the global environment where trade is taking place, and we want to ensure that copyright is not infringed. However, the issue of the legalities of what comes into the country and what is not supposed to come into the country is always important. But I'll ask Ms. Parayachi to assist me here.
Ms. Parayachi.
Good afternoon, everyone. That is correct, as well as the sentiments of Honourable Kachalia. It is related to access. And because we've brought in a buffet of exceptions and limitations, including the parallel importation. So if we just take our disabled community, for example, and I'm not talking about the Marrakesh cases, which are books. Look at a DVD. A lot of South Africans missed out on A Long Walk to Freedom, which was a South African movie, dead South Africans because they didn't have subtitles. So there isn't also the skill upset in the country for those to do the subtitles. So the only place they could maybe buy this is, for example, the U.S. or really expensive place. So we didn't want this to be a hamper or an obstacle, because we do want to prohibit in certain cases, it should be an infringement, but there should be also that flexibility, because now we're bringing the law from over-protectionist and monopolies to sort of a balance. So I think that was the policy rationale. But I think also what the technical expert brought in does balance the clause from going too broad to a more acceptable, he's got a safeguard in, which is nice. Thank you.
Let's have a look at the safeguard that we, Honourable Kachalia.
Just a question. We have various jurisdictions around the world who have their own interpretation of copyright law, some are lax and some dovetail with the direction we're intending to go in, and so on and so forth. If, in terms of international copyright law, and I must believe, please assist me here, that something like that exists, that there is international copyright law which says that I wrote this book and I assert my copyright in terms of this book. That must have some international jurisdiction somewhere which says, yes, you're right, that's yours, and nobody can do X, Y, and Z with it. Regardless of what, and if Eritrea does that, then Eritrea will be for the high jump in terms of that, and there will be sanctions against them and the like. And surely that exists, and that's cover enough. Help me understand that.
That is correct. So our two main agreements are the Berne Convention, which is the umbrella body of the copyright. The other one is the trade-related aspects of intellectual property, the TRIPS Agreement under the WTO. The only problem is you have to be a member or contracting party. So the example Charmaine gave with, and it's the least developing country, they may not be contracting parties to the WTO agreement or the Berne Convention, but most jurisdictions around the world are, we are all TRIPS compliant, we are all Berne Convention, so the gap is actually quite minimal in terms of who is parties to these international conventions and not.
Right, thank you very much, Ms. Pariachi. Next time, just wait a minute. As I understand it then, what you've put before us in the black, you've crossed out the red, huh?
What you put here in the bold is the proposal of the technical team. Now, I want to hear, what is it exactly? Because I see some red crossed out and others retained. What exactly came from the technical team?
Okay, if we look at subsection 2, the wording in black is the current wording of the bill. So in other words, the bold, the bill is taking, is deleting in the act. So the bold is currently in the act, the bill says this must be deleted. Then the bill adds the red bit that is currently crossed out. So up until the crossing out is the bill at the moment. The proposal then is that we retain the bill up to the word if. From if, we delete and we replace it with the word if the making of such copy was without the authorization of the copyright owner. And the same then apply in 5.
Then we come back to a question raised by a member. Well, someone's printing, it's been printed in another country, but they have not sought the authorization of the copyright owner, and it's sold there. Or are you talking about only what is printed in this other country and brought back into our country? Or is it both what is printed in that country, sold in that country, and sold in ours? I want that quite explicit. So it's printed in Eritrea, it's only sold in Eritrea, and they never got authorization of the copyright owner. What then applies? And how are you to learn whether or not they got the authorization?
Thank you, Chair. This clause only applies to importation into South Africa. Our Act cannot apply extraterritorially. So what happens in Eritrea stays in Eritrea unless it is imported into South Africa. That is what this clause then deals with. So yes, we will have to deal on an international level with what happens in Eritrea. To find out whether the copyright owner gave permission, I suppose a letter from the copyright owner, a contract, etc., would be able to show that there was the necessary permission given.
Let's assume for the moment that no authorization was sought and they are imported. How then do you pay the copyright owner the royalties? Who bears the cost of that if Eritrea says no?
Without the permission, Chair, it will be an infringement. And then in that case, there might be remedies that are sought, some of them are civil and so on. So that will be an infringement. But I think this talks to the question about how will you ensure about the authorization, which is more of something that we can guard against when it comes to the actual implementation. Maybe the regulations can also look into that. Because it is important, we can have this, but if it's not a practical application, then it becomes, it's not enforceable. So it's something that we should be looking into. But the examples that Advocate gave about the contract or an agreement or some kind of formalization will assist in this regard.
If somebody is not a signatory of the treaty, what international law covers us?
Nothing.
Chair, unfortunately, if a person is not a signatory, then there is, I suppose there are other things that could add, because I think we must answer this seriously. Your first step would be to be if someone is actually part of a treaty, that's your first step. If someone is not part of the treaty, there might be a bilateral agreement between South Africa and that country, so you will look at that. If there isn't a bilateral agreement and it becomes a problem, then we will have to start speaking to the necessary, would it be trade, would it be international relations, and say, we are having a problem. We have a flood of books and of paintings and things from Eritrea. I'm not sorry to use Eritrea, but that was the example given by Mr. Badoy. We are now, our market is being flooded. We need to start entering into negotiations with them in respect of a trade agreement.
Well, members, I think it sounds very much like this should be advertised.
Yes.
Right? Yes, right. slide 10.
Thank you, Chair. This is the last proposal. All that is proposed here is that the bill provides, in the course of business, if a person makes imports, lets or sells, let me just maybe give members a bit more of the provision, section 28. This is still on the provision of restriction of importation of copies. So what we have here is Ms. Woods from WIPO said, you can't limit the making, importation, selling, letting to business. That is not what the treaty provides. So we need to remove in the course of business. And then what you pointed out is, if you look at all the actions that are possible under the sections that deal with the nature of copyright in work, we have excluded communicating to the public a work. So a proposal is that we also insert or communicate to the public a work or a copy of the work. So this is purely to bring this section 28, paragraph B, in alignment with the treaty. And Chair, those are the proposed amendments.
All right, now look, that's purely a consequential agreement. Now let's just go back. We all agreed on the definition. Critical that the definition is sorted out, advertised, etc., page 3, 16. And then we have the issue around literary, etc., the distribution, essentially, around that one. Rental. Recording access in respect of audiovisual, providing for an effects right. Then the collecting societies, which are absolutely critical. Now, what was the challenge here? To refresh it. Subject to such conditions as may be negotiate licensing fees and tariffs. Just refresh my memory on that one again.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 6, what we have is the first insertion there is paragraph B, which is the converse of the obligation to keep records. So if a user must keep records, the collecting society must be empowered to ask those records. And then E is just that it's not just royalty rates that they negotiate, they also negotiate licensing fees and tariffs.
Then creating an offence for not providing information is related to that. Providing for the skills of an administrator to be appointed for a collecting society. So there's an insistence here that at least one of those in the administration of the collecting society should have the skill, which to me is pretty reasonable, I think. And then you go on to the royalty section, clarifying section 28 that we've spent a lot of time on, and then the clause in alignment. Essentially, you're looking at 5, I think. Let me see. 1, all right. 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, it's 6, a very small one on the administrator, and 7 and 8 are related. Right. Are we in agreement? Here we are. This is the request put to us, the proposal by the technical working team on those clauses and issues that to ensure that we don't hit the first hurdle of a constitutional case immediately, that we advertise and get this back. Yes, Honourable Kacharya?
Chair, it's my understanding that what we're saying is that we're putting these forward for advertising. The decision will come to later, and this produce will take into consideration. That's fine.
We're getting submissions back. Right. Now, that will be done for 10 days. I assume the 10 days will start from tomorrow when we put it out. And Mr. Herman, and consequently, the program may be tweaked here and there as to what we'll do on a particular day. All right? So can we have someone to propose that that goes forward? Honourable Kadebi, yes, seconded by the Honourable Kachalia. Right. Okay. Thank you very much to yourself, Advocate Vandamirva, the DDG, Ms. Padiachi, the broader team here, and of course the technical advisors. Please extend our appreciation to them. Thank you on that issue. All right. Now, members, we're really quite ahead of schedule. It's 20 past 2, and we move to the consideration of the BRRR. There were some issues, you remember, we just keep on going back to this, that you were asked to, as soon as you can, to bring in any comments. Apparently what has happened, and there is one class, how soon are they coming back to the Sheldon? How long? Mr. Herman? Mr. Hermans, will you please call Yvonne? Will you please call Yvonne? What is the time delay to get these? What has happened, and I'm not sure what on earth is going on with the printing system. You can see yourself on page 5, it's gone all over the place. And then you go to page 8 and 9, half of it is off the page. So what we can do, though, is we're looking at the highlighters. So let us go to the highlighters section. All right?
Okay. Is it okay if the copyright team can be excused from the meeting?
Well, I don't know that the BRRR is under copyright. But seriously, in terms of the work that you were given to undertake, yes, you may be ready.
Okay, you are excusing the team of copyright. So as chair of the committee, subcommittee, I can also request that you excuse me to deal with my team.
So you see, the subcommittee's been disbanded. But on a very serious note, the DTI are not members of the committee. They are guests. You're a member of the committee, but you also happen to be a member of Labour, as you know. We have already made requests to the Chief Whip that you be made what is called an alternate, which would entitle you to attend every meeting, but you choose. And we're still waiting for that. So you're still a full member. So given that exigency, you are required to remain. But that was a good try. It was a very good try. Members, we can immediately go to page 5. Ms. Sheldon here? Yeah. The DTI response. And we've got the Group Chief Operating Officer here from DTI. And the Group Chief Operating Officer sitting right here with everyone right. The response here, we see that from DTI. You would not have had the opportunity to read it, but it's not long. Do you want to talk to any of these, Ms. Matamela?
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify that response, Chair, is actually an update on the recommendation
3.1.1. Right. An update.
Because
an update on 3.1.1, right? Okay, I think most members will appreciate that. Let's see what that was. Establishing a monitoring mechanism and consultation with Minister of Finance and other relevant. And the response is they meet regularly to discuss these issues. All right? And you move right down to failure to comply with the transgression of transgressing Regulation 14 of 2017, Preferential Procurement Regulations, which requires compliance on local production and content. You refer to the Auditor General and his involvement then, but you also acknowledge the role played by Proudly South Africa, which has put in place, I didn't know this, a tender monitoring system. Did some of you know that? We asked for that to be considered, and we should try and hear more about it when we can, which monitors designated tenders for compliance with local requirements. Where there are lapses, the PSA informs the DTI for intervention, and what the DTI does then is they ask these procuring entities to either retract or amend the tender in line with that. Now actually that's a vast improvement, because that was something that was requested by the committee 2 years ago. It's now being done. I think that that's a very good point. A request for additional funding was made to National Treasury.
Apologies, Chair, that sentence starting with the request is talking to 3.1.3.
Yes. So there we are. That third, number three, refers to the point in our report, additional funding for SABs in the outer years, etc., to upgrade critical aging technical infrastructure. Current fiscal constraints preclude that. However, the DTI reprioritized 100 million from its own budget to SAD as part of the adjustment process. Again, today, that will enable SAD to upgrade some of the aging infrastructure. Just for the record, it would be useful by Monday to find out exactly. You know, 100 million is very little money when it comes to that kind of infrastructure, as we learned. You can give us some idea by Tuesday morning, say Monday afternoon, what were we looking at here when we say upgrade? Were we talking about a new screw, a new bolt, or, you know, a new piece of what equipment? And what is there is certain essential equipment, isn't there? And there's other equipment that you need, but it's not such a priority. Let's get some understanding of what it was. I must say thank you for whipping the team into action to come with responses. Page 10. Yes, Comrade Honourable Hadeb.
Just before we pass that, I think the last time we had a problem, because this 100 million was over a certain MTA period. Is it over financial year now?
That was the Honourable Chair is referring to NEMISA. That was the case with NEMISA. This one is for the current financial.
It was NEMISA were taken into account. It was like petty cash over 3 years. Right. On page 10, the response to this refers to average number of employees. You said the Honourable Mantash was sick? She in hospital? No, because we wish her well and hope she recovers by Tuesday. Average number of employees in the DTI is reduced from 1,483 to X, page 209 of the annual report. And this we know was largely due to the moratorium that one had there on the cost of the employee's budget.
But also, Chair, this was in relation to a query that was raised by the Honourable Malhashi.
I'm not sure if it's
supposed to be in the report, but it was a response to the question she raised about the compensation of employees' budget.
Yeah. Now, I think it's important because it's an issue that has been frequently raised. And, is this... It did seem a bit high to the Honourable Muntush. That's why I'm sorry she's not here. If I had a way of scheduling my medical health like all of us, we would do it. But that, like this, you can't schedule, eh? You can't schedule it, no. But because you can see this directly addresses the issues she raised, including the compensators, also salaries. The figures are correct. Should be noted that the capital budget, and then you mentioned that about NAMESA, since 2013 formed part of the economic competitiveness support package. The DTI has continued to support NAMESA, which is misspelled there, with a capital budget beyond that for purposes of procuring their own building.
That was in response to an issue that was raised by the Honourable Tlangwini.
Who was in the team, the portfolio committee, when we visited CSIR and actually visited NAMESA there? Who was in there, Honourable Williams, and yourself, Honourable Kacharya? You will recall from that visit, the issue was both the building, it was just not big enough, something to do with the airtightness, the vacuums required for things, but secondly, it was also the equipment. You will recall at that time. Here I see there's a reference to the building. What for us would be very constructive, Chief Operating Officer, is whether or not they are going to be able to budget in this new year for some equipment, because the life of that equipment, we were there 2 years ago, someone again correct me if I'm wrong, and we were told that equipment only had 3 years' life. Do you remember that, Honourable Williams, Honourable Kacharya? Remember when we were there and we pointed to something and the whole floor was juddering and everything, and he said, this one's only got about 3 or 4 years left the life. So that's why I'm asking that question. I forget what that piece of equipment was called. Page 11. Majority of the debt, let's see here about the debt, oh yes, the impairment. Do we see that there? In the previous paragraph it talks about the financial reporting and the impairment. The debtors, and they're not an actual loss, okay? In fact it was referred to as a potential loss, is this the one? So the, there on page 11.
We've got a new copy now. I believe that copy that you've got just hasn't got all the pages.
Left the employer of the department but have debt relating to bursaries leave without pay and salary overpayment. With respect to taking leave without pay, I was under the impression that even under the current labor law, every employer has access to certain funds are withheld, as it were. Maybe it's part of one's leave funds until they estimate, no, look, you've had all the leave pay, you won't get another cent, or actually, you haven't had this leave pay, and you're then only paid out. Now, I understand that's quite legal in labor law and is operating in the private sector. Does it not operate that principle in the public sector? Where someone leaves, you don't pay them out all the leave pay because you want to just check what have they done, and then you pay it out a month or two later. Can you clarify whether or not that operates, Ms. Matamela? I really don't know. So that's the leave, yes?
The leave without pay that they are referring to here, Chair, is when somebody... for instance, you've exhausted your leave day, but then you have taken leave and then you resign. And so the department has got to be, there's no leave left. So we are supposed to claim back the money. But for whatever reason, there are some employees who manage to leave without the money having been claimed.
And overpayment, though, how are we overpayment?
I think in one of the meetings, I think it was in the annual report, it was picked up as well, and the CFO explained this to say that we get paid on the 15th of the month. So if I get paid on the 15th and I resign, that money has to be recovered. So these are some of the debts that end up sitting.
It is for that to happen. Aren't we also paid in the middle of the month, Honourable MacPherson? Ooh, I hope there are no MPs leaving on the 16th. No. No, it just goes... No, we're not employed, but it's a strange thing about MPs. You hammered on both the positive and the negative. Negative quite justifiably. 13. Page 13, or your page, it's just above 4.2.2.1. And it says DTI response. No, I'm looking further on now. This is my page 13, and it's above 4.2.2.1. But there's no 4.2.2.1. That's my problem.
No, there is. On page
13. Huh? No, it isn't. You see, I go straight to, on your copy, Honourable Williams, to page 17, where it says 4.2.2, and then there's a table. Exactly what happened with this? I mean, really, is it? Page 18. It's at the end of quarter two. The DTI, as at the end, the DTI has spent that.
If you go to yesterday's report, 4.2.2, it was the financial performance, and it was talking to the DGI financial performance for quarter one. So what you see now on page 13, the yellow, we were trying to explain what our financial performance was up to quarter two, but what is on page 13 currently, my view is that it shouldn't be there. We should add, because yesterday the request was for us to include the reasons for the variance, which is the second part of the yellow there, which says this is mainly due to. So we're explaining why there was under expenditure in quarter one. So the 4.2.2 remains, and we are supposed to add the second paragraph of the yellow on page 13.
Are you saying then that the first part of the yellow or grey should not be there? Yes, because you see, we can't deal with quarter two if we haven't in fact taken that into account. All right. So take that off quarter two. The report has already made it clear we're not dealing with that. All right. So then you go on and you move on quite extensively, it would appear. Right, your must be your 28, the yellow 22. It's captured under just prior to 5.2.3, that last sentence. The National Regulator for Compulsory Services has appointed a service provider to conduct an organizational review. Review of the structure and grading are part of the scope of this project. This was due to some people being overgraded or something. What was it? Yes.
It was due to those people who are being paid above what the grade.
I've been paid above my grade.
Right. Then under
It goes on, due to the ongoing organizational review project. Just looking here, the issue was around these funded posts, and the question arose, what are the critical posts? Have they been filled? The critical post, because there are many vacant posts, but one of the critical ones. And your response is, the NRCS is only appointing on determined critical positions. Fair enough. All other vacancies will be filled after the organizational review project is completed, as they will be. I think that's acceptable then. And then you go on to the next page, 29, or you remain on 22, where one is saying, well, where does the largest percentage of employee costs go to? Again, the Honourable Mantash raised these issues. The NRC is 2014-2015 wage agreements provided for employees to be moved one grade up where the competency program was implemented. I think it may be advisable for us to use South African English and not American for the word program. And secondly, all managers were to be placed on post level 6 and above. Is this in line with the public service requirements, or is it peculiar to the NRCS? Ms. Matamela?
Because the managers in the public service are from level 12 upwards.
Okay. In order to address this, as and when the positions become a vacant, they are being advertised and filled at the correct grade, and the organizational review is also expected to correct some of the anomalies. I think it'll correct a lot of the anomalies, frankly. You then go on to page 31, and I expect I go on to page 25. It's 5.4, key issues raised by the committee. 5.4.1, progress on the ICT. I think you someone raised this at length. I know I also raised it as something that we started dealing with years ago. You know, and where are we with this ICT now? The committee commended the NRCS management for detecting the conflict of interest with the awarded tender, etc. furthermore emphasize the need for NRCS to clearly understand the ICT solutions it required and to ensure the appropriate solutions are procured. In this regard, it should consider engaging with other state entities to assist in developing the system, etc. It reported that it had improved its existing capacity to drive the ICT modernization project and have the support of a highly qualified ICT steering committee that had been appointed over the last few months. It also had a high-level audit, risk and compliance committee that was overseeing the project. There is an internationally acclaimed ICT company that is assisting the NRCS by providing technical advice on the matter, on the project. The NRCS agreed that collaborating with other government entities is critical, but its challenge has been the legacy system that it has been operating on. Yes, I'm afraid that has to go into the legacy report because it was a legacy system in 2004. And it's too long. Too long now. 5.4.2. Turnaround time for LOAs. That's what I was referring to earlier, Honourable MacPherson. You had raised these issues about that, but now had not been significantly reduced over time, and that there was continued criticism regarding the impact of these delays on trade. The NRCS informed the committee that the current turnaround time frame is 120 calendar days. This had previously been working days. Furthermore, it clarified that most importers have been experiencing challenges, etc. This leads to their goods being stopped at the port of entry for inspection and being stored while the LOA process is being followed. This created delays and additional costs for importers. The process should be that importers should first apply for an LOA before importing their goods. I thought they did. Honourable MacPherson?
When you say the NRCS clarified that most importers, I would then believe that that would be 51% or more. Now, that is just simply not the case. They have never produced any evidence to say that. In fact, it is a mantra that they have continued to beat for the last 4 years, and it is simply not true, unless they can prove that it is true. So I really, it is a red herring for the inordinate delays that businesses have to continue to suffer. And every year they keep saying the same thing, and they've actually never proved that. What they also seek to do is they seek to use that as a justification why everyone else who does apply for their LOAs in time are delayed. And they give no justification or no reason for why they are delayed. So that is just not factually true, and I don't think should form part of this point.
Well, the problem that we're having is that we don't know. That's our challenge. You know, one way or the other, we don't know. Is it true? Isn't it true? So there's no evidence in any direction. So what we, yes, Honourable
Khadebe? Chairperson, I think that one is going to be very difficult to prove because we don't have that capacity to investigate that. We expect that when the departments come to us, they must, because they are under oath, they must give us the relevant information. But if there's any any information which you can use that they have misinformed us, I think that we must hold them to the code. But if you don't have, we cannot also cast aspersions on them.
And this is it. So what we would ask you, Ms. Matamela, is just do one last check with them, point out what has been said here by the Honourable Whip, because we all know how seriously the country is taking statements made to mislead Parliament. And it's very serious. 5.4.3, the committee also asked about the compliance of unregistered companies and formal shops, etc., and they mentioned they were doing these raids. They are working with NCC and other regulators on this. 5.4.4, and the only reason I'm just whipping over that is, in fact, we've seen it on TV and heard it on radio and in the press. Retention of surpluses. Whether the NRC has retained its surpluses and why, where are these surpluses coming from? The surplus is due to delays with implementing the ICT modernization project and from additional income due to increased efforts to ensure compliance, etc. It would be useful for us to know what is the delay then in the ICT modernization project, if it's not money. It's not money, clearly, there seems, or, you know, what is it? Is it because we're still hiring the relevant team? I see we've got a team there now. Where does the surplus come from?
NRCS, when they came, I think it was the 13th of September, they explained that they had advertised the tender. They were in the process of appointing a service provider. What the CEO reported was that when the recommended service provider was recommended to him, he realized that this was a person who was a member of his ICT Steercom who was being recommended, and so he stopped the process because there was a conflict of the person was conflicted, and so they have now re-advertised.
So there's a very clear explanation for that. Management of the wage bill. What measures were being taken to reduce overexpenditure? And again, the organizational review process is referred to here. DTI explained that due to historical unrest there, the wage settlement between management and unions had led to current scale. That may not be optimal. But clearly there are legal constraints in just simply reducing the wages. Filling of critical posts. Are they happening on say? Yes. The Chief Information Officer position had been interviewed in September and created. Resolution of audit findings. The depth of the order and the outsourced to an external order firm. There were some issues that were acceptable before. Some of the issues that had been acceptable before are no longer. Committee then asked NRC what they were doing about this, and they reported NRC's report that it was working with the AG on how to resolve the revenue qualification. The AG acknowledged that the NRCS was moving in the right direction to resolve the qualification. However, they estimated that this could only be resolved within the next two financial years. Now, this was raised, I raised it yesterday or the day before, that's not acceptable. And the reason that it is not acceptable is they've had that pointed out for 5 years. So how long does it take to get this involved? There must have been a reason. 5 years ago when they said they were working with the AG, what went wrong? Was it 4 years late? when this term began, they were working with the ADG on that. Not fully collect stuff. We need some, you know, there has to be some reason you see why this term. Is it because there were no senior people there, no management? I don't know. We need to have an understanding.
We have communicated your concern, Chair, and Edward promised to give us something by tomorrow in terms of how they are going to turn the situation around. But they are busy with that event of theirs. They've got that commemoration today. So
now that's why they sent me a late invitation the day before. No doubt. Matters of investigation. Committee inquired what the status of the certification process for the Gauteng ETOL, the investigation regarding the Phil Ford Cougar fires, what was that for the Gauteng, and then was. In terms of the ETOL, the NRCS reported that it has not been concluded, as this is a new legal metrology environment. What do we mean when we say that's a new legal metrology environment? We've got all the measuring instruments. We didn't create new ones. What do we mean by that?
Not sure if they are referring to the fact that the ETOL is a new thing. I will go back and clarify.
Yes, because I understand we're one of the most advanced countries with our instrumentation. Then again, in terms of the Ford Cougar investigation, the NRCS were working with the NCC. The NRCS has provided the NCC with technical support, but the final report had not yet been issued. Right, that is fair enough, that thing on the Ford Cougar, but the ETOLs, is it the instrumentation or what? You know, right? And members, those are, I hope everyone has clearly understood, that was the clarity we asked for. We have now received, we have now requested further clarity on the matter. Mr. Hermans, when are we coming back on this report? Because we want conclusions. I've said either tomorrow, start giving them to us, Thursday, Friday, Monday, sending them to Mr. Herman.
Chair, the committee has scheduled the consideration on the bill on Tuesday, so they request that members submit their conclusions and recommendations to us by Monday afternoon, that we can include it in the report for consideration on Tuesday.
First thing or, you know?
Chair, we should be for 12 o'clock.
Okay, 12
so
o'clock.
So the afternoon after we deal with the copyright matter. So around about 12:30 we'll be dealing with that matter.
Thank you very much. All right. Members, we've been through that now. I want to thank Ms. Matamera for giving us the response, seeking the clarity from her colleagues, but also to point out to you, Mr. Lima and Mr. Hermans and various other people have managed to put together, as I understand with NIDU, the responses we requested in respect of recommendations. Did everyone get the pack? Right. Honourable Lydia, you get the right. So we've all got that, and then that may assist you with your further recommendations and conclusions
on the matter. Mr. Hermans, given what the decision we took on copyright, what are we looking at?
Okay. Yeah.
What I'm going to do, members, just to give you a rough idea, you're aware that we just couldn't steam ahead on copyright in certain areas, so we've had to make changes. And what we all know, you don't have a... You don't love. Friday, what is it now? Right, that is tomorrow. We're not meeting, but the publication of the additional clauses, all right? Then on the 16th, that's Tuesday, 10 o'clock, consideration of the input, all the technical experts, etc. And we go on Tuesday from B119, it is our venue this time, until 13:30 is the house sitting. Now, just the house is not sitting, but the reason for not continuing is because the technical team needs to work on what we've done, okay? Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, we start at 9, going on till 13, and on the 18th, we start at 9, going on till 13. Then on Friday, we're not meeting.
Sorry.
Honourable Maxman?
Yeah, please note, on the 18th, the Thursday, the DA has a caucus that morning.
Right, well then we'll shift it to the afternoon. We'll shift it from 1300 and it'll go on, yes, Honourable Fadeka?
No, Chairperson, not the 18th in the afternoon. The President will be answering questions in the House.
But that's why I said, is the House sitting and I was told
On Tuesday it's not sitting, on Wednesday it's not sitting, on Thursday it's sitting.
Oh, I'm with you. On Thursday.
Sitting. And then also the ANC. It's got caucus. Yeah, it's got caucus.
Yeah. So you see, what Mr. Hermans has done here, he's been trying to juggle the program while we've been working. Because so on Thursday, we will not be sitting in the morning. Caucus is all over. The President answering questions in the afternoon. We have the opportunity after the President to meet. So just consider that. Because I'll have to negotiate. On Friday, it's publication. Just move. On Tuesday, we go back to the regular issues. All right? Please look at this more carefully when you get it tomorrow. It will be emailed. Because by then, I will have consulted the whip. Because at this moment, there has been no consultation. All right, thank you. Meeting adjourned until next week, Tuesday, 10 at V119.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.